6. Moments later, Philip's private sanctuary was crowded with wizards. Philip liked to call it his inner sanctum. All the other wizards called it his rumpus room. Martin asked what was going on. Philip pointed to his wet bar. Sitting on the bar, there was a large salad bowl, the most beautiful salad bowl in the world. It was a perfect half-sphere, made of the thinnest, clearest glass Martin had ever seen. The bowl was kept upright by 3 impossibly perfect, clear glass dolphins that acted as legs.
"Where do you get that?"
Martin asked, approaching the salad bowl.
"The bottom of the stairs," Philip said. "I was tending to some important chairman business, and I heard a ringing noise. I went to investigate. I found that. There was no note, and before anybody asks, I checked, and the phrase, 'So long and thanks for all the fish,' isn't engraved anywhere on it."
"So someone left it there and rang a bell to get your attention?" Jeff asked.
"No. You know nobody can get up in here without my permission. That's why Gary's waiting downstairs."
Philip looked at the floor and yelled,
"Having fun down there, Gary?"
A muffled voice answered,
"No."
Tyler asked,
"So what made the ringing noise?"
Philip reached into the bowl and pulled out a glass disc about the size of a coaster. But again, it was the most breathtakingly clear and beautiful glass coaster Martin had ever seen. Philip held it a couple of inches above the bottom of the bowl, then let it go. When it struck the bottom, it created a loud, clear, yet somehow soft tone that filled the room. Philip said,
"I figure whoever sent them put the bowl there first, then sent the disc a few inches above it to get my attention."
He handed the disc to Martin.
"Now, to get your attention, I'll ask you to take a look at this."
Martin held the disc up to the light. It weighed less than he expected and was cold to the touch. As he turned it in the light, Martin saw that it was etched with some sort of pictogram. It showed 2 figures in pointy hats standing, facing each other. Between them, they held a large half circle, each supporting it with both hands. In the middle of the half-circle, Martin could make out a circle that he was sure symbolized the glass disc in his hand. Beneath the 2 figures, there were words. It was hard to read such small, fine print, etched so lightly on a transparent background, but Martin immediately recognized that the words were the names Philip and Martin.
"So, Philip, what do you think?"
Martin asked. Philip said,
"If they were trying to hurt me, they'd have just sent a bomb or something."
"Unless they wanted to hurt both of us," Martin said. "This bowl thing does put us in the same place at the same time, touching the same object."
"True,"
Philip allowed.
"But all the same, this doesn't feel threatening to me."
"Me either. Still, this could be dangerous."
"Agreed,"
Philip said, before yelling,
"Okay, Gary, you can come up now."
Gary, Tyler, Jeff, and Roy took shelter behind Philip's beloved Pontiac. Even though it was from the 80s, it was the most advanced car Roy had ever seen. He was not impressed.
"It looks like a doorstop." "It's about as mechanically sophisticated as one, too,"
Jeff said as they took up their positions, cowering behind the car. Like any Fiero owner, Philip had learned to ignore such comments. He and Martin stood in the middle of the room. Philip held the bowl in one arm, the disc in the other. Philip asked,
"You ready for this, Martin?"
Martin answered,
"Not really, but we're gonna do it, aren't we?"
Philip said,
"Yes, yes we are."
He placed the disc in the bowl, then held the bowl up so Martin could help support it. Soon they were each holding the bowl with 2 hands, as the picture had demonstrated. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the rim of the bowl glowed a vibrant bluish green. A pulse of light traveled the entire radius of the bowl, glowing brighter wherever Philip and Martin were touching it. The pulse subsided, and the disc lying in the center of the bowl glowed and lifted into the air just above the bowl's rim. A shaft of blue-green light projected upward from the disc, grew more diffuse, then coalesced into the figure of a person who stood facing Philip. It was a young female with short hair, large eyes, and an impish smile.
"Hello, Philip,"
the hologram said.
"Hello, Gwen,"
Philip replied. After a pause, Gwen said,
"This is a recording. I can't actually hear you."
In spite of himself, Philip said,
"No, sorry."
After another pause, Gwen said,
"Don't be embarrassed. I hope you're well."
Behind the Fiero, Roy whispered,
"Who's that?"
Jeff said,
"Gwen, female wizard. She used to live here. She and Martin kinda had a thing."
Tyler added,
"Martin had most of it. Then she took off for Atlantis."
The image of Gwen didn't show color, but her flared, sleeved, hooded cloak was all too familiar. Beneath it, she wore what appeared to be a lightweight dress and sandals. Gwen's posture stiffened, as if she were starting into a rehearsed speech, which it immediately became apparent she was.
"Philip, as chairman of your colony of time travelers, you are invited to attend a summit to be held here, at the sunken city of Atlantis. You will meet with the leaders of all the other known colonies. Together we'll try to create a solid foundation upon which to build our mutual future. The topics of discussion will include chronological pollution, the ethical treatment of non-time travelers, and prevention of the abuse of our shared power. This invitation has been extended to you and a second representative."
Olo Gwen jerked a thumb over her shoulder, as if indicating something behind her.
"Specifically, it's been asked that you bring Martin."
She looked back over her shoulder and smirked at Martin, then turned her attention back to Philip.
"This is not a command. This is a request. You may choose to decline this invitation, but you won't. Regardless of whether you attend or not, you are welcome to keep this bowl as a token of Atlantis's goodwill. It is made of solid, molecularly pure diamond, the hardest material on Earth. It is also dishwasher safe. You can give the disc to Martin. Maybe he can use it as a paperweight or something. When you're ready to depart, you and Martin are to recite the following phrase in unison. Transporto unau Atlantis cum veno. At which point you'll be transported here to the sunken city of Atlantis, just in time for the beginning of the summit. You will be here for 2 weeks. It'll be warm. Pack accordingly. Also know that I've managed to get the shell program running here in addition to the system the Atlanteans already had in place. So all of your existing powers will work."
Martin leaned to the side to make eye contact with Philip, who looked just as surprised as he was. Holographic Gwen glanced back over her shoulder to where she assumed Martin would be standing. She said,
"That concludes the official message. I'm adding this last part because I know the two of you won't be satisfied if I don't."
Gwen turned so that both Martin and Philip could see her in profile. She took a deep breath, put the hood up on her cloak. She looked from side to side in an exaggerated pantomime of fear, then said,
"Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope."
With that, she bent at the waist, mimed putting a card into a slot, then disappeared. The glowing disc went dark, wobbled for a second, then fell into the bowl, creating one last ringing noise. The three wizards and one trainee who had been hiding behind the car stood up.
"So, when do we leave?"
Gary asked.
"You leave immediately,"
Philip said,
"and go home. Martin and I will probably leave for Atlantis in a couple of days. We need time to prepare and think things through."
Martin nodded.
"Sounds good."
Gary agreed.
"Yeah, that'll give you time to decide that you have to bring me along."
Tyler said,
"Gary, give it up. You or Gwen, they just want Martin and Philip."
"But they've got to take me with them."
Jeff asked,
"Why's that?"
Gary was clearly amazed that he had to explain something so obvious.
"Because,"
Gary said,
"I really want to go."
He turned to Philip.
"Please, Phil, please take me with you. I want to see the ladies. I like the ladies."
Philip shook his head.
"No way, you're not coming."
"Philip, it's not fair,"
Gary whined.
"Think of the ladies."
"I am," Philip said. "Guys who act like you're acting are part of what they created Atlantis to get away from."
And you're gonna let him get away with that?
Gary's voice grew louder. He was almost manic.
They'll have forgotten how to deal with suave guys like me. It'll be like shooting fish in a barrel. Only instead of fish, it'll be ladies. And instead of shooting them, I'll be...
Yes, we know what you think you'll be doing,
Philip interrupted.
And instead of in a barrel, it'll be...
Shut up, Philip said. You're not coming. That's final.
Fine,
Gary seethed.
I'll stay here. You two keep all the ladies for yourselves.
Roy had been making an effort to listen more than he talked, which doesn't come naturally when you seem to be older than everyone around you by at least 20 years. Now he couldn't contain himself. He had to figure something out. He turned to Gary and said,
Say the ladies again.
The ladies.
Roy shook his head and repeated,
The ladies.
Gary smiled and repeated,
The ladies.
Why do you say it like that?
Like what?
Roy said,
It's like you're talking in italics.
Gary arched an eyebrow.
Italics?